Good evening, everyone. And thank you, Michael and Kate, for inviting me. I certainly hope that they come and visit the Zen Center of Vancouver sometime also. I'd like to talk, as I often do, with a Zen teaching that I feel is very much at the core of our actual existence, our actual life, and that's the Heart Sutra. And it has a very famous phrase which you all know: form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Form, we all know, is the relative world. Here I am, I'm myself. There you are, you're yourself. Here's this floor, here's the cup, this whole world. It's the conventional world. And I don't think anyone's got a problem about what form is. But what is emptiness? Emptiness, I hear, is a Buddhist term, and it signifies nothing fixed, nothing permanent. And following from that, there's things that follow on from that. So let's look at what it means for us. We all think, here I am, myself. But the Heart Sutra says, this form of myself, of yourself, is not fixed. There's nothing permanent, unchanging in it. And it points to our deeper nature. It also points to the fact that we tend to say so often, myself, I'm this sort of person, or of someone else, they're that sort of person, they're this sort of person. But the Heart Sutra points out, people don't have any fixed, enduring characteristic. And if we think about that, we have this tendency to think about ourselves or someone else in a particular way. We put a label on them that they're a happy person, a sad person. But if we really look at it, they're changing all the time. Sometimes they're happy, sometimes they're sad. There's Buddhist meditations from other traditions that are of a style to examine oneself and to find out who you are. And when you do that, you can't find anything to hold on to that's fixed, that's unchanging. Whether you look at ourselves physically, chemically, look at our emotions, our heart, our thoughts, the way we relate, the way we do everything. And the Heart Sutra says, this is the nature of everything that we take as an object, as a thing. That it's, to use perhaps more modern language, it's all process. It's always change. Everything is in flux, is process. There's nothing fixed. Yet, we have a self. So what is the self? Kate introduced me as coming from a Rinzai tradition, and I don't want to sort of argue too much, but I'm very wary of getting too sectarian about these things. But the person I taught with uses koans as a way to point, to examine something. And one of my early koans was, how do you hear without using your ear? And it's put in a poetic way. What it's asking is to investigate the fact that normally we think, I listen to a sound. I use my ear, it comes through my ear. And the koan's asking, investigate. Find the experience where sound is not something we label. That we don't have the mental framework of here I am listening to something through my ear. And I bring up sound because this is often at the beginning the easiest thing to catch our true nature with. Because in the style of teaching I had is that we examine the nature of reality bit by bit, and we build up to its full true nature. And to work with that koan isn't at all mysterious. It just means practice letting sounds come, letting them go, and eventually let go of the observer, the subject that's listening to the sound, but there's just sound. And perhaps you've all experienced this. But working with a koan, you just look at one narrow thing, which is working with the sense of hearing. And of course, this builds up. We can practice through seeing. How do you see without using the eye? All the five outer senses, the other ones of smelling, tasting, touching. For most people, it's not too difficult. But then we come to a difficult one, which is the sixth sense, which is the mind. And the data that comes through the mind is our thoughts, our feelings. And I'm sure you've all noticed this. We all have a tendency to identify with our thoughts, to take our thoughts as more real, our ideas as more real than what's actually existing. We have these ideas, and we have a tendency, perhaps before we started practice, of sticking our self-identity on them. And it's often quite an effort to break this habit. It seems to be a deep root, those neural pathways are really deep rutted in that habit. But eventually we do. And I think we all know methods not to get caught up in our thoughts, yet at the same time, not to stop thinking. And little by little, in this practice, we begin to catch glimpses from different angles, from different aspects, of what it is to actually be free of holding on, of being attached to anything. Are you with this? It's very important to have a feeling, perhaps, for it. As soon as we think about it, we solidify it. We make it an object too much, an idea of ourself. What is it to really let go? The analogy I often use is like swimming in a river. What we're practicing is swimming in the river of life, of letting go. We can't just stay on the bank of the river, you know, hold on to ourselves. We have to plunge into life, be involved in life. But then when we do so, we find, how do I swim? It's not so easy. I'm getting pulled under by circumstances. The Zen I'm used to says, we can find our own way. We all have a terrific capacity of learning from the experience of life. And as we do so, it's a matter of engaging in life, swimming in the river of life. And at time, we find that the river at different times, sometimes it's slow and steady, sometimes it's very rough, sometimes it's white water. We have to learn to swim in all the different ways life comes at us. And the only way of really learning is to practice swimming in the different currents we come across, to actually practice with the different things that come up in our life. Not to avoid them, I don't want to swim, then we just blah, 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 we sink down. we get lost. And eventually we do. We've all got this great capacity. This capacity is often called Buddha nature. We have never lacked ourselves. What we've often done is picked up a lot of doubt about ourselves. We worry too much. We doubt ourselves. What we're asked to do is to trust something. We don't know what it is that we have to trust. We can put it in words and say, trust our Buddha nature. But Buddha nature isn't a thing. It's trusting the fact we are capable of swimming, even though we don't know how to swim. And in just that practicing of swimming, we find little by little we can swim. I think perhaps you get the idea now. In practicing with life, we're actually practicing what it is to be a human being in the real sense of the world, the full sense. There's, if you like, dimensions to being a human being. We have a body. We have a heart. We have our mind. We have all sorts of relationships, whether it's personal ones or just meeting someone as we get on and off the bus or go through a checkout stand in a store. In fact, our very nature is relational. When we look at it, look at ourselves, we have no existence apart from the situation I'm in. The more we practice, we realize we're not separate, we're not apart from this very place. This is another way of thinking of emptiness. As we continue practicing, we settle more deeply into the reality that everything, in fact, is part of myself. And conversely, I am part of everything. There's no separation. There's no distance. That's just an idea we have. Perhaps before we start practicing, it tends to be habits we have of holding off, backing off, or creating separation. But the more we practice, we realize our actual nature is relational. It's part of the flux of life. Literally, when we think ourselves withdrawing, separate, this is what it is to become deluded about the nature of things. To wake up, to let go of delusions, is to begin to experience, to live the reality that we're in this seamless relationship, this seamless life. The more we practice this, the more, little by little, we let go of these landmarks of what we think of ourselves. I'm this, I'm that. So also the practice we find of just giving ourselves to where we are, to who we're with, to the situation we're in. When we come to do this, we see that there's an interaction, if you like, between inside and outside. Let's talk of inside and outside in this seamless whole. And we need a balance between both. And the balance means being open, receptive to life as it comes to you, the person that comes to you. But equally important is to bring up your own presence, your own person, so that there's an equal balance, an equal power, an equal interaction. And that nature of ourself has got dimensions. We have a body, we have a heart, we have thinking. And we need to practice with all of them. Sometimes people think spiritual practice is some special thing, some special component to life. In one sense, it's to grasp the whole of oneself, the whole of one's life, and to practice that. So it matters how we take care of our body. It matters how we think. It matters how we feel about things. It matters how we talk, what we say, how we listen. Everything we do matters, because whatever we do, however we manifest, is part of this flux, is contributing to the whole in some way. And I think this, I don't know, I've never practiced in Asia, in the East, but I think in the West, we've all come to know we should take care of our bodies, we should take care of diet, we should take care of so many aspects of ourselves as a human being. And that is part of spiritual practice. We often think, how do I do this? And it comes back to that swimming in the river. You have to trust something deep in you already knows. You have to trust something that you don't know, but you just trust that it's there. It's also could be seen as listening deeply to yourself. When we settle down, keep quiet, we start hearing things that is deeper, fuller than this little voice that bubbles on up in our head. When we're not looking, you know, at this, at that, bringing up ideas, we're in a space where we can actually see more clearly, not just see the person on the surface, but have a deeper feeling for the person of how they are. This capacity is actually, has always been there. It is our nature. Our practice, in a way, is returning. Letting go of what's false, letting go of worries, letting go of doubts, and trusting what's there. Letting go of trying too hard. Letting go of not trying enough. And just trusting what's already there. It's a very deep sense, Buddhas have often called of it, of letting go. Another way of thinking about it is just deeply relaxing, especially in these times where there's so much coming at us, all our connections through the internet and so on. Our nervous system gets tense, gets stressed. We need to let it very deeply relax. This is practicing with our body, with our nervous system, and let it function in the way that it wants to function. It might seem like slowing down, but it's actually relaxing into how we originally are. When we do that, we don't have to worry about being a better person, or I should do this, I should do that. What Buddhism calls our Buddha nature is wholesome. That's a Buddhist word. Christianity might use people are good, everyone's a good person. Buddhism has the word I've seen translated as wholesome. It's a matter of trusting that. It's a matter of letting go of what's false, where we doubt ourselves in some way. And it's not easy. I'm sure we all practice this. We're so busy trying to deal with things that we don't fully let go and trust what's already there in ourselves and being able to work with situations. And that's exactly our practice. And then rising, embracing everything, breathing in, pregnant with everything, and coming alive with that. This is what it is to wake up. Ah. How's the time going? I seem to have covered a lot. I should go a few more minutes. I'm just going to talk more generally now. These are interesting times we're in. Of course, there's plenty of difficulties, we know that. But it's also a time with many different traditions, spiritual traditions, are mixing together in the Western world. Different cultures, different countries are sharing what their traditions are. And what we've got available to us actually is many, many traditions, many ways that we can help come more alive, be more vital in our life, in a way that's fully, this relational way of living can also be called the way of compassion. The way of compassion means to really be open to what's here, to really feel, to really know first with the heart of how things are, and to come forth from that place rather than ideas about compassion and so on. There's many traditions, and I personally am very open to using what works. Am I not too sectarian about Soto and Rinzai, I'm not too sectarian even on Zen. If something helps me, I'm grateful. Examples for that, I do yoga. It's helpful. And doing yoga, not just in the terms of exercise, but the fuller sense of living as a complete being, the different types of yoga that you get, not just the physical one. What's common in the West is using people like counselors and therapy, not to think there's something wrong with us, but knowing them as a method for us to see ourselves more clearly, to come to know ourselves, and be able to get free of certain characteristics that are hindering us, certain habits. There's many other traditions. I find with my students, the younger ones, often take ayahuasca, as it's called, from the shaman tradition. And I've looked into that, I've got curious, it sounds really strange, yet finding out it actually, when you take it, it puts you in the same mind as you get in Sesshin. I don't know, some of you done Sesshin, the longer Sesshin. We all go, I don't know about you, but for me, in a very strange mental space. It's not a usual one. And it's the very same one, and it's difficult to say what it is, but it's going into a type of consciousness where a lot of things can happen, and I don't think anyone can say just what it is. It's a way of letting all our processes, different processes, process ourselves. I spoke to someone actually from Brazil, a shaman, about that, and he said a lot of younger people get into it, they hallucinate, and he said that's not what it's about. He says that just is a sign of having a weak mind when you do it. And I thought, that just sounds like Sesshin. If you've got a weak mind, you're just following your thoughts on and on. Except in shamanism, you go through all sorts of hallucinations instead. There isn't really a difference. It's a matter of staying steady in that retreat mind and letting the process do the process. So there's many traditions available to us. I follow very much the legend of the historical Buddha that taught that no one can tell you what really works for you. You have to try it yourself. You have to come to your own conclusion. Is this helping or is it not helping for where I am now? And this actually is what Buddhism is. What is Buddhism? It's a pharmacy. It's a pharmacy. It's a collection of medicines. And the idea is to find the medicine so we can regain our wholeness. We don't have to take every medicine in the pharmacy. That's being a spiritual hypochondriac, trying everything, whether it works or not. And even if we take a medicine, it might make us whole in a certain way. And when we are, we don't have to keep taking the medicine. Pharmacy is a very good analogy. Later on, we might need another medicine. Buddhism's like that. There's a huge variety within Buddhism. I really believe, and just personally with people that ask me about practice, say, find what works for you. At the beginning, we're not sure. It's best to stay with something and get into it deeply. But when we really get in touch with this process of waking up, something deep in us and an intuitive feeling knows, we get pulled almost to what helps us if we can settle down into this open space and hear more deeply, see more deeply. I think it's wonderful there's so much variety. I've used a variety myself. I guess some people just do one thing, just do Zazen and that's enough, just do koan study. Quite frankly, I've never met one of those people yet. Not ones that have really woken up that way. We're a whole human being. There's lots of aspects to ourself. And there's lots of aspects to ourself to practice. How to open our heart. How to really listen to someone else. How really to take care of ourselves in a normal physical way. How are we going to live in this world that in fact is myself and I am part of it? There's so many different aspects, and the Zazen that I do is this contemplation. Koans, my teacher said, actually are an artificial system to get you to the point where just naturally you're investigating, looking at life itself. Life itself is the koan. And you do these, if you like, artificial koans, looking one aspect of life, of reality, looking at another aspect, until one builds up or brings forth an awake enough person that you can use life itself to learn how to be a human, how to contribute, to be part of life, to really find our own humanity. And I think I'll leave it pretty well at that to say it's an amazing journey. I don't know, perhaps all of you get the same thing. The more we practice, the more this underlies is the most important thing in life. We've got other things. We have to work. We have to have money in this world. We're in relationship. We've got family and so on. But there's something that underlies all this. And this is, who are we? What is our real nature? And I think we're called to Zen or some other tradition from this. What is it that calls? It is what's deeply genuine in all of us that wants expression, that wants to come out, that wants to blossom into who we truly are. If you have a seed of a flower, a seed of a tree, within that seed of a flower is the whole flower. Within the seed of the tree is a whole tree. And those seeds, a flower and a tree, their whole life force is to fulfill what it is to be the flower, is to fulfill, to grow what it is to be a tree. It depends, of course, on the environment. Having enough food, sun, water, it's the same for us as well. But we also, in a certain sense, have the seed of being a human being. That seed wants nothing more. This whole life force is trying to grow like the seedling into the fullness of what it is, for us to grow into the fullness of what it is to be a human being. And just to be sure, we have to say that that human being is a relational one that can't exist apart from its life, apart from its surrounding. So what it is to be a human being is how we live with life, how we live with situations. Everything I believe has this life force, this seed, to fulfill who they are. And this is what practice is. I found it a very effective way of growing. I've come to places where I think, this is impossible, I can't get further. But you just keep working at it and working at it. And eventually something breaks, something goes through. That, even though the seed is so small, it's got a power, a life force, that can create the wholeness of what's in that seed. And it's the same with us, as much as a flower or a tree. Something deep in us can't stop trying to fulfill who we truly are. And practice is none other than just something, you know, to help us in that journey. Thank you.